You ever watch this guy on television?
You all were not telling the truth, and you should not be trusted.
Congressman Matt Gaetz, thank you for what you did for your country tonight.
Be offended with the Democratic whip, not House Republicans.
Like a machine, Matt Gaetz.
Welcome to Hot Takes. I'm Congressman Matt Gaetz. Let's talk about the news. We'll talk about the competing town hall forums with Joe Biden and Donald Trump participating on ABC and NBC respectively in just a moment. But the biggest news story in America is that Joe Biden and Hunter Biden lied about their relationships with corrupt business leaders in Ukraine and other parts of the world, that there are now evidence, emails, texts that fully prove these corrupt relationships and these corrupt meetings and the lack of truthfulness from the Bidens. And when that information was discovered and reported by the New York Post, it was censored by social media, Twitter and Facebook in particular, catching a lot of heat over this blatant election interference. Late last night, the legal lead of Twitter, Vijay Gad, put out the following tweet. Over the last 24 hours, we've received significant feedback from critical to supportive about how we enforced our hacked materials policy yesterday. After reflecting on this feedback, we have decided to make changes to the policy and how to enforce it. Why the changes? We want to address the concerns that there could be many unintended consequences to journalists, whistleblowers, and others in ways that are contrary to Twitter's purpose of serving the public conversation. We put the hacked materials policy in place back in 2018 to discourage and mitigate harms associated with hacks and unauthorized exposure of private information. We tried to find the right balance between people's privacy and the right of free expression, but we can do better. We've recently added new product capabilities, such as labels, to provide people with additional context. We are no longer limited to tweet removal as an enforcement action. We believe that labeling tweets and empowering people to assess content for themselves better serves the public interest and public conversation. The hacked materials policy is being updated to reflect these new enforcement capabilities. So what is changing? One, we will no longer remove hacked content unless it is directly shared by hackers or those acting in concert with them. Two, we will label tweets to provide context instead of blocking links from being shared on Twitter. All other Twitter rules will still apply to posting or linking. So this is quite the statement, and I think the hottest take was from at G. Ronald Smith, Smitty Smat, who replied, "That's an awful lot of explaining just to say you'll be more selective with your censoring and that you'll flag things you don't like." Here's my hot take. Who's Twitter to flag information and provide their filter or their lens? Do they not trust their users as creative, imaginative, and critical thinkers to be able to ascertain whether or not the sourcing of information is relevant to its credibility or viability? It's really a slippery slope when you've got the tech oligarchs deciding that they're going to be judge, jury, and executioner when it comes to the posting and sharing of content. So while I'm glad that Twitter got a lot of pushback based on their just very, I think, unfair administration of their hacked materials policy, and now we see they're going to continue the labeling, they're going to continue to try to own the frame so that they can own the way that our country acts and behaves and operates. And frankly, we need more in Congress willing to stand up to big tech and to stop taking their special interest PAC donations. And I want to congratulate and thank my fellow Florida man, fellow Congressman Greg Stube, for joining in my call for Republicans to stop taking federal PAC donations from these big tech companies. They get away with so much because they buy off Congress. We ought to reject their funds. We ought to make it clear that they don't own us, and we ought to make it clear to our constituents that they don't own us. Another member of the Judiciary Committee, a member of the Florida delegation, Greg Stube, put out word to his campaign staff to stop taking those donations from those sources. Let's hope others join suit. Last night, President Trump and Vice President Joe Biden held competing town halls, and I think by comparison, the president did quite well
If you were to read the transcript of the Biden town hall, it would look less like an exchange of questions and answers for an hour, and more like someone threw scissors at a dictionary for an hour. Just words and sentence fragments everywhere. I don't know that Joe Biden could be the commander-in-chief so much as he's commander of the sentence fragment. Many Americans are being told by public health officials that Thanksgiving might not be an appropriate family gathering, but if what you miss most about Thanksgiving are the wandering stories and never-ending answers from, like, Grandpa, Joe Biden gave you plenty of it. You could just eat some turkey at home alone and replay the Biden town hall meeting. Listen to just, like, the meandering thought process that the former vice president put on display.
And the next question is, am I worthy of your vote? Can I earn your vote? And the answer is, there's two things I think that I care, and I've demonstrated I care about my whole career. One is, in addition to dealing with a criminal justice system to make it fair and make it more decent, we have to be able to put black Americans in a position to be able to gain wealth, generate wealth. And so you look at what that entails. It entails everything from early education. That's why I'm supporting making sure that we entitle one schools, as you know, schools with the least tax base to be able to support their schools. I increased the funding for them from 15 to $45 billion. That allows every teacher in that school to make up to $60,000. And the problem now is they're leaving the schools. They're not there. We're short about a million and a quarter teachers. Number two, every 3, 4, and 5-year-old will go to school, not daycare, school. And what all the great universities, including the one you've gone to, go to or went to, in fact, talks about in the last 8 years, what's happened. What happens when you let them go to school, they make up rapidly whatever shortcoming they had.
It is evident that Joe Biden is not up to the job of the presidency just by virtue of watching this town hall, his lack of cognitive engagement, his lack of command over the English language and the thoughts he's trying to convert into words. It was quite the experience. It was also pretty boring. I talked to a number of people who wanted to switch back and forth between the Biden town hall and the Trump town hall to get a flavor of both. And what almost every single one of them said to me, even Democrats, was that the Biden town hall was just insufferably boring. And you compare that to President Trump's exchanges with Savannah Guthrie and the folks who attended in Miami, and the president was in command. He was high energy. He was focused and engaged. One thing that was disappointing about President Trump's town hall is that in the first 20 minutes, Savannah Guthrie seemed to focus on a lot of issues that just aren't kitchen table issues to Americans. She focused on QAnon and what were the protocols of the party planning committee and white supremacy. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of discussion about schools or education policy, the environment, water quality, air quality, things that really do impact the duration of our lives, the quality of our lives. In responding to questions, though, I do think the president showed good empathy. And in a word, he was just downright charming. The president is so interpersonally charming when folks spend time with him. He lights up, particularly when women are around. A lot of men do. And in this forum, there was just a very high presence of female activity, from Savannah Guthrie being the moderator. You had the mother and daughter that were there, and Trump kind of charmingly joked to the mother that they would work together to get the daughter's vote. And go ahead and play that clip of the president and the mother and the daughter and a discussion about healthcare and coronavirus, frontline workers.
You're going to like this next couple of voters. It's
good.
A mom and a daughter.
Good.
Mom, Barbara, voted for you in 2016. She's leaning to vote for you again. Now, her daughter was too young to vote last time. She's going to vote for her first time in a presidential campaign, and she is leaning Biden. So imagine the dinner table at their house, okay? So, Barbara, why don't you go first and ask your question?
Bienvenido a Miami.
Thank you.
Mr. Trump, as a frontline ER doctor working through the coronavirus pandemic,
right,
I know firsthand, and I've seen that many hospitals throughout the United States are suffering financial hardships. These economic effects are trickling down to the frontline workers.
Right.
We are being, across the country, frontline workers are being fired, they're being furloughed, our salaries are being cut. And this is also happening in other economic sectors as well, including the travel industry and hospitality.
Right.
My question to you is, how are you going to get the United States back on track, both in terms of the economy and the pandemic.
So it's happening. We just set a record, 11.4 million jobs. We are going to have a phenomenal third quarter, which will be announced on November 1st, just prior to the big November 3rd day, where I think you're going to see a red wave. But we're going to have a tremendous announcement, I believe. I mean, we're going to find out. But GDP is going through the roof. Jobs, real estate, houses, so many things are happening.
You even had some flirting going on during the president's town hall. Not a whole lot of that during the Biden town hall, but one lady sure liked the president's smile.
Good evening, Mr. President.
Thank you very much.
I have to say, you have a great smile.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
He does. You're so handsome when you smile.
I thought some of the president's best answers were on the economy and the intersection of the economy and coronavirus, saying that the cure cannot be worse than the virus, that we cannot allow America to be fundamentally changed for the worse as a consequence of lockdowns. Take a listen.
The cure cannot be worse than the problem itself. We did the right thing. We were expected to lose 2,200,000 people and maybe more than that. We're at 210,000 people. One person is too much. It should have never happened because of China. It happened because of China. And you have to get that and understand that. But it shouldn't have happened.
Undeniably, these forums did not fundamentally shape the nature or the contours of this race. I do think that the upcoming presidential debate will be a very important one. I know undecided voters who I think want to vote for Trump, but they want to see an elite debate performance. Let's hope they get it. Let's hope the president brings it in the coming days. I've got fresh polling on Judge Amy Coney Barrett. This coming from One America News. 48% of the country now supports the confirmation and seating of Amy Coney Barrett on the United States Supreme Court. That's up 2 points from just a week ago. It's up 9 points from a week before that. So Amy Coney Barrett does not just prevail here as a consequence of Republicans holding a majority. She quite clearly won the hearings. She won the rollout. She's had an opportunity to display grace and intellect and charisma and empathy throughout these hearings. And you didn't really see Democrats going toe-to-toe with her on the law, instead attempting to evoke issue sets rather than jurisprudential temperament. That was one of the critiques that Republicans offered of the way that Democrats handled the hearings. But in quite an interesting move, Senator Dianne Feinstein, the Democrat lead on the committee, praises Senator Lindsey Graham, the chairman. Take a listen.
I just want to thank you. This has been one of the best set of hearings that I've participated in. And I want to thank you for your fairness and the opportunity of going back and forth. It leaves one with a lot of hopes, a lot of questions, and even some ideas, perhaps some good bipartisan legislation we can put together to make this great country even better. So thank you so much for your leadership.
Following this praise, Senator Feinstein and Chairman Graham have a mask-free hug to close out the Senate judiciary hearings on future Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett. And the political left in America appears to be turning on Senator Dianne Feinstein, the Democrat lead in the Judiciary Committee, suggesting that perhaps she needs to lose that position. Demands Justice is a group funded by George Soros. Their executive director, Brian Fallon, putting out a statement that she needs to go, that she needs to be removed, and if she is unwilling to step down, that her fellow Democratic senators must remove her. Trouble on the left, indeed. This could be the biggest news on big tech that we've had during the entire Trump presidency. Finally, Chairman Ajit Pai of the FCC putting out a statement that the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, will engage in rulemaking so that there is clarity to Section 230 that does not allow the discrimination, the bias, the shaping of the truth that so many of these digital platforms are attempting to engage in. I have long said, Congress will not regulate big tech because Congress is bought off by big tech. But the FCC ought to be free of some of those political pressures. They ought to be able to delve into the conduct and practices that these companies have utilized to try to conform the world to their political viewpoint rather than hosting a non-biased digital platform. And they get benefits in the law by virtue of being a non-biased platform, but there's never the transparency, the checking to ensure that they in fact live up to the law. That's why this rulemaking is so important. Here's my hot take for Chairman Pai. Force transparency. Force these companies to allow regulators to observe how the algorithm interacts with content. 2, collect evidence on the human beings who are the content moderators. We've seen from Project Veritas that people have the ability to go in and alter search, suppress content, elevate content, make things trend or not trend based on their politics, not based on how the people of this country are interacting with news or facts or even lies that they encounter, but ought to have the resources and ability to sort through and vet. 3, we need to really investigate the third-party groups that create the protocols that allow these tech companies to censor, remove, block, lock out, flag. A lot of these groups are like straight up left-wing entities that have no desire for fairness, and yet they're deemed like the umpires of the internet. That's not fair. So this is a major development. This is a welcomed development. I praise Chairman Pai for stepping up to the plate. I hope the rest of the FCC will follow suit, and I hope we aren't too late. I hope that this rulemaking process forces real transparency, real change in conduct, and if it just did those things, looked at the algorithm, looked at the people altering the content, and looked at the outside groups, and then required big tech to be honest about those negative influences, I think big tech could do a pretty good job of self-policing the negativity out, but they have no such incentive in the absence of FCC action. That's why I'm glad they're getting on the job. No trick or treating for you. That's the message from the city of Beverly Hills, California, to their constituents. They've passed a city ordinance making it illegal to pass candy to another, whether that occurs through a door or through the trunk of a car. Apparently, there's something called trunk or treating that they wanted to ban too. Interestingly, they also banned the spraying of shaving cream on another person, something that apparently also happens during Halloween, though they have created an exemption for licensed barbers. So don't worry, licensed barbers. You will not be accidentally swept up by the Halloween police because someone confuses you for someone who has chosen the trick. Violations could be met with fines or other penalties. Let's hope that the Beverly Hills city jails are not full of people in costumes hoping to get their trick or their treat. I have a fascinating hot takes update for you. Some weeks ago, we told you of a person in a jetpack being sighted near the Los Angeles airport, and you won't believe it, but it's happened again. The Los Angeles Times' Richard Winton has the staff report, Los Angeles International Airport officials are investigating reports of someone wearing a jetpack in a flight path, the second such report in a little over a month. Here, a China Airlines crew member noticed someone flying at about 6,500 feet, 7 miles from the airport. The FBI is investigating the sighting, and they apparently haven't solved the last one. My favorite part about this story is that as the airline entity is communicating with the air traffic control tower, one air traffic controller is quoted as saying, "Only in LA, only in LA indeed. We will continue to follow all stories of humans on jetpacks." Wow. Steve Scully of C-SPAN should have never been picked by the Commission on Presidential Debates to be a moderator. As a former Biden intern, as someone who had shared Never Trump content online, his bias was evident. It was open and obvious. But you see, the Commission on Presidential Debates, an establishment institution, equity, fairness, it's not really important to them. They're about maintaining power, but they sure have egg on their face today. Steve Scully releasing a statement that he lied about his Twitter account being hacked.
He thought he was sending a direct message to now Trump hater Anthony Scaramucci about whether or not to respond to the president following the president's criticisms, which were the same criticisms I echoed on this podcast. And instead of sending that as a private direct message, he sort of had the Anthony Weiner dynamic just without the nudity, where he posted publicly what he thought he had only sent privately, then the predictable claims of hacking, then of course the lack of any evidence of hacking, then the admission that there was no hacking and that he had just lied to the people. And of course, if you're in media and you lie to people, then there's really no reason for anyone to listen to you ever again. You wield no power. You can take no positions that change laws or impact the oversight of programs. You're a commentator. And when your commentary is not truthful, when it's a lie to be self-serving, to cover up your own actions, well, then it typically renders someone unwatchable, unworthy of the contribution to the discussion when they're unwilling to maintain the veracity that is required. And by the way, it just strikes me that this isn't the first television commentator to have this problem, though the outcome was far different at MSNBC. Joy Reid had on some of her digital platforms some very awful, homophobic, transphobic, just really terrible things that that were posted on her platforms. She claimed that there was a hack. She then had to sheepishly confess that there was no evidence of a hack at all. She just didn't remember writing those things, very different than a hack. And then was rewarded with the Chris Matthews slot on MSNBC primetime. So I guess if you lie about a hack and work at C-SPAN and you're Steve Scully, your career may be over. If you lie about a hack and you're Joy Reid on MSNBC, you get a promotion. What an interesting double standard.
Thanks for listening to Hot Takes. I'm Congressman Matt Gaetz. Make sure you subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, leave us a comment to let us know what you think of the show. Have a great weekend. Join us next Monday for more Hot Takes.